Thank you, Peter. And thanks again to the Basilica folks for hosting us. It's really the perfect venue to do this, and to all of you for coming out on such a humid evening. Peter did tell one small fib quite innocently, which is he said that we're not going to barrage you with a lot of details. I am going to barrage you with a lot of details. But I've tried to focus on, in this presentation, on salient details, which will give you a flavor of what's going on here. And a little bit of understanding so that we all can really work together on this moving forward. One other small correction I would make is our history with this area and this building actually goes back before the cement plant fight. I see a few of you veterans of the AmeriClean fight, which was took place in early 99 when Mayor Scalera and the county leadership thought it would be a great idea to bring all the dry cleaning waste from the Northeast, dump it in this building, and give a fly-by-night Canadian company called AmeriClean, for some reason, a $600,000 grant to do this. And they claimed to have a patent-pending technology that they wouldn't show anyone and a pilot plant that they couldn't remember where it existed. And that was like boot camp for us for the cement plant fight. And we won that battle. It's just great to be in this space without any perchloroethylene or other dry cleaning waste circulating around our ankles. So to get into the LWRP, as recently as 2004, really up until the summer of 2005, there were no gravel deliveries to the waterfront, none, and that's well documented. That activity, which has caused so much controversy and delayed the LWRP for yet another 5-6 years, started the summer after the St. Lawrence cement decision, started slowly and ramped up quite quickly. And as you can see from this chart, by 2006, they had 130,000 tons, according to the draft LWRP, going to the waterfront every year. In their application of the town of Greenport, they've projected going up to 500,000 tons per year. You do not find that figure in the current LWRP, but it most certainly is in the dealings that they've had with the town of Greenport. Now, that would certainly indicate, if they were to do that, a major increase even beyond what we're already seeing in terms of how many gravel trucks would be going per day down to the waterfront. However, in the LWRP, it says the level of operation currently occurring at the port is not anticipated to change, at least not significantly. Pardon me. But as is very common to this document, which really sometimes it's referred to as a draft, sometimes it's referred to as final, there are many, many contradictions throughout the document and its supporting GEIS. So elsewhere, having told us that there's no anticipated increase or no significant increase, we read that there's a need to manage harbor traffic because there'll be a likely increase, pardon me, in the activity at the Deepwater Port. By the way, Deepwater Port is a mistaken term which was taken out of most of the plan, but in this excerpt they forgot to take it out. But that was one very small victory that we won, getting that language corrected. So do we have an increase or not? We're not sure. And where are these trucks going to go? One of the other many contradictory and puzzling things in the plan is that we read in one place that the Basilica is for sale, on page 27, that the building is currently for sale and future plans for the structure and land are unclear. Well, the Basilica hasn't been on the market for 8 or 9 months. I think the deal to sell it happened well before that. The city has been revising the plan during that whole period and is certainly aware that it's sold. And indeed, later in the plan, you find out that indeed the city attempted to buy the Basilica, but it was sold to a private party who are right here in the room. Just a fundamental question of why is this document, which has been under such intense review, such scrutiny, still full of glaring mistakes and contradictions like this? This slide shows, this is just an amplification of a diagram from the LWRP itself. One of two potential truck routes, once this so-called temporary route, was done away with, and shows you how close these hundreds of trucks per day potentially would be going to the building in which you sit right now. And there is the second route. And I'm just trying to imagine seeing an art fair or a music festival or anything else in this building with that kind of activity going on. The city has limited the activity slightly to 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on weekdays. Many of us use the waterfront all week long, of course. Another issue which has really been at the forefront of all these debates and arguments over the plan is that of property rights. And we've heard repeatedly that the reason why the city does not want to follow the vision plan, does not want to follow the public input, does not want to follow the Randy Daniels decision in Sunset, which is a sort of a term of art that lawyers like to use to sunset the existing industrial activities of the waterfront, is that it can't be done because Holcim has so many vested property rights that it's just too hard to do, we've been told over and over again. And we've had some lectures from the city attorney about takings law. I think her understanding of it is quite shallow, frankly, and really a one-sided representation of it. Though we're told that Holcim's property rights mean that acquiring more of the dock area for the city is impossible, we read in the plan that eminent domain could be used to obtain the Basilica property. I don't know that the Basilica owners have ever been approached about this, although the plan again claims to have talked with all kinds of stakeholders and been very responsive to public input. Meanwhile, the city of Hudson's planner, Frank Fish, from a firm called BFJ, came down and spoke to a meeting of the council where he said, this appeared in one of the papers, we don't recommend trying to take away Holcim's property rights. Again, why is the Basilica in the crosshairs and not Holcim? The Valley Alliance does not particularly like the idea of eminent domain at all. It's an option that's on the table. But clearly the city has applied a double standard when it comes to the big industrial giant from Switzerland and the Connecticut gravel haulers, get eminent domain wiped off the table for them. Still on the table, apparently, with the Basilica, at least it's in the plan. Now I come to what is potentially the most fundamental thing that we've discovered about this plan. It's a tricky point, but I really want to try to convey it to you. Hundreds and hundreds, thousands now of citizens have answered surveys, written emails, signed petitions, sent in postcards, sent in letters over a very long series of public comment periods going way back, as Peter said, into the 80s, saying, look, our waterfront is very compact. It's very dense. It's not like Newburgh, where you've got a mile and a half long stretch where maybe you can put a shipping operation at one end and a restaurant at the other, and they're not going to affect each other. Everything, as you saw from the images earlier, is really cheek by jowl here. And citizens have said over and over again, as has the Secretary of State, as is recognized in guidance documents from the Department of State going back all the way to 2003, have said, look, the two cannot coexist at this location. They're too close. You can't have a picnic next to an active gravel loading operation. You can't drive down that little narrow, the narrow road to go down to a new boat launch when there's hundreds of trucks going back and forth. You're not going to bicycle there. You're not going to take a kayak out next to a massive barge either. This is a very well-documented public and official position. So industry has been at the center of the discussion. When you read the plan, you find this amazing statement that there are no active water-dependent industrial, in quotes, uses in the waterfront boundary area. There are none, it says. Well, haven't we all been talking about the trucks and the gravel and the loading and the problems in the second ward, from this industrial activity? How do you explain this? Well, it slowly becomes clear. Elsewhere in the plan, it says, it admits, yes, there are still some industrial land uses localized within the waterfront boundary area. Then we get to the only industrial related, which is a new term you find in here, use, is the existing stone and gravel stockpiling and distribution or shipping. Okay, so it's industrial related. You also find in the plan something that many of us are very glad to see, that manufacturing industrial processing activities are not permitted. Looks like we prevailed, folks, right? So how do you explain all this? The city attorney or the planners, I don't know how this got in the document, but only in the most recent draft, after 24 years, have reclassified this activity as not industrial. It's the same activity, it's the same problem, but now it's being treated as a commercial shipping use. It's being treated as transportation, and what has been referred to over and over and over again as industrial is no longer an industrial use. And so they say, therefore, our plan is consistent with all the public input and all the precedents and all the rulings and all the decisions. It's strictly a change in name. And to me, it's deeply, deeply cynical. It's not how you respond to public input. You don't just use new nomenclature to solve a problem of this kind. The most amazing part, of course, is that Holcim, over and over again in its correspondence with the city, describes itself as an industrial use and defends itself as an industrial use. So I hope this point may need more amplification, but to try to claim that they have responded to all of you, they've simply changed the terminology and said that industrial problem is not industrial, therefore it's okay. Another topic that comes up a bit in the plan has been a focus of a lot of our work, and part of the discussion is taxes. And I just wanted to get into some of the material related to taxes in there. Our position, and this is again reflected in past state guidance and rulings, is that if you develop a waterfront which includes what's now being used for gravel loading, you open up that space. It might take some years to get there, but once that's done, the economic benefits to the city would be so much more far-ranging, whether it's in property taxes, whether it's in sales taxes, whether it's in new jobs, new businesses opening up. If you have marinas, if you have boat rentals, if you have restaurants, if you have hotels, if you have marine supply shops, maybe a small traditional boat building business, you get so many more tax benefits than you would get from the gravel industry, which is a wholesale business and whose owners don't even live in the state, some of them not even in the country. So, but we learned that, you know, the reason why we can't incorporate that dock into the rest of the waterfront is that we would lose the taxes from them. This is one of the many, many comments in the current LWRP, which is completely non-responsive to the public input. We very specifically laid out that there's a need for an economic impact analysis to demonstrate these claims about what's beneficial and what's not to the city. Council President Don Moore is here tonight, wrote a great letter back in March of 2010, where I thought he was dead on, where he said Holcim contributes little more than a very modest property tax payment to the city. I couldn't agree more. In the Secretary of State's decision on St. Lawrence Cement, in which he laid out extensive instructions to the city on how to proceed with its waterfront, and I'll get to that topic in a minute, again, he recognized and really based the decision as much in economic considerations as environmental, saying you're not going to build this giant cement plant and barge facility because there's so many better things you could do with your waterfront. And the statement's up there, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he talks about encouraging the highest and best use of the land, and if you don't do that, it reduces the potential tax revenues to the city. Exactly our point. Then we come to the wetlands, and I think I've only got a couple more of these, and then we'll get to questions and answers. a key bone of contention has been the South Bay wetlands. They're federally designated and protected at really a pretty high level. And people have said, look, even though we all want the trucks off the city streets, and there are ways, we believe, to do that besides what's been contemplated in the plan, that even if you want to do it, it's simply not an appropriate solution to run them through the bay. There you see a visual by Bob and Peter that shows some of the extent of the water that's still in the bay. It used to be all open water, of course, and everything is pretty damp over there. Now, I believe this is the city attorney's language. In the draft environmental impact statement for the plan, says that the South Bay Causeway, the route through the bay, is not part of the designated wetlands, implying or explicitly saying that therefore all this concern about the wetlands is misplaced. The citizens don't understand where these wetlands are. And there is a dispute as to whether the wetlands are one big property or four or five little, ponds. But as you'll see in a moment, that's a completely irrelevant argument, and the city attorney should know better. New York State DEC is largely in charge of overseeing and policing the environmental conservation law of the state, and they note that around every wetland is an adjacent area of 100 feet that is also protected to provide a buffer for the wetland. That so-called causeway, it's an abandoned rail bed, is within 100 feet of multiple wetlands. It's overlapped by this buffer zone from practically every direction. So the city attorney's attempt to say it's not part of the wetland, therefore it's not a problem to put trucks through it, is patently ridiculous. And here's the law itself. Activity subject to regulation shall include erecting structures, roads, any form of pollution, and any other activity which substantially impairs any of the several functions served by freshwater wetlands or the benefits derived therefrom, whether or not they occur upon the wetland itself, if they're in the 100-foot buffer. And in fact, I didn't give you the whole section of the law, but it does say that the city, if they wanted to, could, or any municipality, could expand that buffer well beyond 100 feet. But there's wetland on both. Let's say we accept the city attorney's claim that the causeway itself is not part of the mapped wetland. It's overlapped by this buffer zone from either side and is equally protected. Going all the way back to 2003, so the state said in multiple letters, multiple times in each letter, that it is not appropriate to encourage the expansion of industrial development into the wetlands of South Bay. Same letter. Again, the wetlands of South Bay are not appropriate for industrial or other development. The plan is doing the exact opposite. Now, again, a lot of this decision to have a temporary route, which none of us who've read it believe could ever be temporary, it will become a permanent route because the Basilica route is not feasible, the LB route is not feasible, and there's absolutely no controls for the city. If the city came after 5 years and the trucks were still going there, there's nothing in there that would tell it that where the city could tell Wholesome, you have to stop now, if they haven't provided a new alternative. But the argument has always been, this goes back to when Linda Mussman was the waterfront chair, and I was on the waterfront committee. Certain members of the committee started to say that, it's a shame, but we really have no controls over these trucks. There's nothing we can do. They're running in through the first ward, and we got to get them out of there. And I agree. Peter agrees. Our organization agrees more than anyone that the truck traffic through the downtown of Hudson is extremely obnoxious, hazardous, dangerous, a hazard to everybody's health. And it does not need to be there with this plan or without it. The city has the power to stop those trucks and has had that power since 2005. This is a photo by Tim O'Connor of an accident of one of the trucks involving the Amtrak line, I believe, 2 years ago. I thank Tim for allowing us to include that. But here you have, again, the plan arguing, well, unfortunately, the current zoning makes the use of trucks to transport materials to the port an as-of-right use, and therefore it cannot be halted. And that's the argument we've gotten over and over again in spite of the following. This is from the city code 325-17 for industrial districts, which the port is currently in, that says that even if a use, like trucking gravel to the waterfront, normally would be a permitted use or even a conditionally permitted use, if it presents a hazard to the public health or safety, it is prohibited. The building inspector could go down there tomorrow with the zoning code in hand and issue a citation to Holcim and ONG and stop them, and the trucks would no longer be running through the first ward tomorrow. Maybe we all ought to go down there tomorrow and file a complaint to have it done, because this entire plan is based essentially on environmental blackmail. They have, in the most cynical way, invoked the very important concept of environmental justice, which says that impoverished communities, communities with non-native speakers, people who work multiple jobs, who don't necessarily come to public meetings, they have rights too in this process. I could not agree more. I got very involved with that issue during the St. Lawrence cement fight, because cement companies target towns like Hudson, where they think people are helpless and really too poor to fight. To invoke that concept, to give these Swiss billionaires a route through the bay, when these trucks do not even need to be there and could have been stopped at any time in the last 5 or 6 years, is really just a disgrace. And every time I hear Linda, who I supported for years, say it, or hear the mayor say it in a letter to the editor, you know, I have to say shame on you, because it really is the epitome of political cynicism. I believe this is the last one, and then we'll get Mark up to speak and take your questions. Ever since we started our Save the South Bay effort back in 2007, our mantra and really our touchstone for what we want to see positively on the waterfront is in the 2005 St. Lawrence cement decision, which went well beyond, as I mentioned, just saying you can't build your cement plant. It actually said you've got a fabulous waterfront, you can have commercial activity, you can have ecological restoration, you can have recreational activity, you know, all those things I already mentioned, marinas, restaurants, et cetera. You know, it's going to be great, and you should do it right away. You should rezone your waterfront right away and get going on this project. However, in the responses to public comments in the DGIS, I assume this comes from Mr. Fish or Ms. Roberts, they say, and with great satisfaction, the Secretary of State did not give the city urgent instruction to rezone its waterfront. And that basically, we're just making it up. This is from the St. Lawrence cement decision. It's bottom of page 10, top of page 11, as I recall. It says a new waterfront zone should be created immediately. I don't know, immediately is a pretty close synonym for urgent. And he actually uses the word must in I believe, the next sentence. Sorry, no, I'm skipping ahead. He then went on to cite very explicitly the Hudson Vision Plan, which was done by the Opera House in 1995, killed by the mayor, but is still considered a very important document by many, apparently, in the state, laid forth how the city should immediately, in his word, rezone its waterfront. And there's a lot of positive stuff in there about residential uses, about commercial uses, recreational uses, restoring the bay, incorporating the St. Lawrence Cement Project in this whole effort. But again, tellingly, in the prohibited uses, states of manufacturing, assembling, storing and processing products or facilities, et cetera, trucks should be prohibited uses. And where did he get that? From the vision plan. And he didn't just mention this in passing. He mentioned it explicitly in the context of this is what you need to do now that you've stopped the plant. Now, again, in stark contradiction of what the city tries to claim in the plan, that there were never any such instructions, 5 months later, is it 5 months? 6 months later, the state sent another letter to the city This one specifically about the LWRP. It was from Nancy Welsh, who at the time was the Coastal Resources Specialist up in Albany for the state. And it was sent to 30 Hudson officials. I believe the addressee was Charlie Butterworth at the time, the head of the DPW. But went to the mayor, went to all the council members, went to pretty much everybody in city government. And it explicitly said, okay, now that we've ruled the cement plant, we got to get going on your LWRP, and here's how you do it. And this is one of maybe 8 or 9 snippets I could have pulled out for you, saying, in light of recent decisions by the council and the Department of State, it should not be assumed in your plan that SLC is always going to be there. You should plan perhaps as if they're not going to be there. You need to have a plan that reflects your current conditions and your future goals, and it should not be tied to a specific owner. This entire plan has been tailored essentially around the immediate short-term needs of Holcim and ONG, in direct contradiction of these explicit instructions from the state, which again directly link the SLC decision to the LWRP process. Here's another one. The dock area plan will require revision in light of recent decisions by the council, Department of State, and SLC. The SLC decision they're referring to is their decision to back out of the Greenport project. And again, in that October 2005 follow-up letter, the state very clear-sightedly foresaw that if you tried to keep industry down here, you're going to have a problem. If the site were to be maintained as an industrial use relying on waterborne materials transport, meaning gravel delivery, then potential conflicts between in-water uses can be reasonably foreseen in the vicinity. In that particular quote, what he's really talking about is, again, you know, you can't kayak next to a giant barge or have a sailboat or what have you. And notice, by the way, that waterborne materials transport is referred to as industrial. It's not a commercial shipping use. So that gives you a little bit of a flavor of it. I am sorry to barrage you with the details, but I think it is important to be specific about some of these problems. You know, some of our issues with the document are more conceptual. They're more about long-range planning and vision goals. A lot of them also are just, you know, how can you possibly bring forward a document that's so full of mistakes, contradictions, and really thumbing the public, you know, in the eye when over and over again, almost unanimously, I think I've seen one comment in 5 years that favors this plan that didn't come from the company itself. We think that there's a lot that all of you can do and help us with to get a better outcome. We have not given up any hope with either our city officials, the state, the federal government, the county has oversight as well, and we'll get into that in a minute. And actually, we have a handout that I'll circulate at some point in just a few minutes, since a few of you may need to go, which is just a first step to notify all the above officials that this really isn't good enough. I know it's gone on for 24 years. We have been calling for an expeditious, speedy outcome for years now. We have no interest in delaying tactics or any of the other things that the mayor likes to accuse us of. We're interested in a good plan, and it's been the obstinance of the city attorney, planners, and a few public officials that have caused what should have been an easy decision back in 2005, caused that to be dragged out and out and out and out. And if it's going to take another 3 to 6 months to get it right, we say let's do it, because people are going to have to live with this plan for the next 40, 50 years. So I'll stop there. Mark, do you want to jump in for a moment? Please.